to the CougarFan.com Rising Shot Podcast, Season 9, Episode 386. This is a weekly conversation about BYU sports between me, Adam Mangum, and my brother Matt. This week, Matt and I talk about the season so far, breaking down BYU's performance against the four P5 opponents that they've faced. The Rising Shot Podcast is brought to you by CougarFan.com, where you can find all of your BYU sports news. Rising Shot Cougars, it's time to talk some football. So last week, after the show, at the end of the show, really, we witnessed, Matt, one of the greatest social media accomplishments of our day. As you attempted to do an Instagram story and yet failed and just posted it as a regular video. And you did it like live on air, which is amazing.
I'm such a loser.
Hey, but Pat had your back. She said she learned from me last week how to do an Instagram story.
Well, there you go. I'm glad that somebody could understand your instructions.
Yeah. Well, no, the instructions were clear.
Okay? I did exactly what you told me to
do. No, you did not.
I don't know. I went back and re-listened to it. You clearly did not.
What you told me
to do. Pat's just smarter than you are. That's all.
No, Pat's smarter than you are.
She may also be smarter than you.
Well,
okay?
that's probably true. I'm just saying she figured out the instructions. You did not.
I think she was just able to figure it out in spite of your terrible directions.
Oh, you're the worst.
You're the worst. You can't explain anything.
I can explain a lot of things. I just can't explain how our game that we play, Answering Machine, I can't explain how that works.
I can't explain why I don't know how to do an Instagram story. Even my wife was like, you don't know how to do that?
Yeah, it's not hard. Five-year-olds figure it out, dude.
Well, maybe I should ask my son to help me.
You might want to. He probably can help you get there. All right, well, I would have to say we got some feedback that it's one of our greatest endings ever.
Well, I'm glad that my blooper is one of our greatest endings ever.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. Well, let's go straight in to the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
Of course, you can jump in, climb on in the tweet bag on Facebook at facebook.com/writingandshout, on Instagram at BYU_RiseShout, on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout, or via email at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com, one word.
Climb on it.
Oh, gosh, why did you have to bring that back, you creepy weirdo? All right, first one.
It's the creepy whispers.
It's the creepy whispers. The first one is from Todd Ebert off of Facebook. Todd says, how good is BYU women's volleyball again this year? The answer, so good that even when you lose to BYU, you actually go up in the polls. See number one Stanford women's volleyball team. Hashtag tweetbag. Hashtag facebag. Hashtag climb on in. All right. I got to see them play against Texas a few weeks ago here in Wichita, and they looked great. They had lost that match, but they looked fantastic, and I was not surprised to hear that they beat Stanford. Didn't, unfortunately, get to see that match. And anytime they can beat Stanford, anyone can beat Stanford, it's a good day.
So is this team going to make another run? I think they do.
It's possible. I mean, they're young. They have they'll be a little up and down because of that, right? Like any young team is. But they've also got a good mix of some veterans in there. And I think, obviously, great coach, which, by the way, she is no nonsense on the sidelines. Not that that probably comes as any surprise to anyone. But, like, not like she looks like, you know, Saban or anything. But I mean, she is into the game. Like, some of the girls are, like, during the side outs and different things, there's music playing, and they'll start, like, bopping, you know? No bopping from the coach.
Yeah, stop that nonsense.
She's not dancing. Well, a couple of girls, they like totally started like grooving. Not like just like head, you know, or foot tapping to the beat. Like totally dancing. And my daughter was like, are they supposed to do that? Said, I guess so. I don't know. Women on both teams were doing it, so. And it happens on football on the sidelines sometimes. Guys start rocking out, right?
Oh, sure. Some guys do it on the field.
Yeah. Yeah. Jamal Williams has been known to
rock
out on the field.
Bust a move, as it were.
Yeah. Keith Smith says this. Did we discuss Nick Emery's dumb tweet
No, we
on the
never. We
show?
ignored it.
Okay. So Keith Smith on Facebook says, is the Nick Emery tweet an isolated incident or an example of the new normal? Should we expect similar future behavior of this generation of athletes? Matt, you go first.
So I don't want to do the whole, like, this generation of athletes get off my lawn thing. Nick Emery had an emotional, perhaps even immature reaction to some information and relating it to his own life experience, and lashed out in a medium heretofore, like previously, not heretofore, but previously unavailable to athletes, right? Like, so it was something that up to this point, like, you know, as the social media, you know, proliferates, the odds of things like this go up, and it has nothing to do with the generation. It has to, you know, some guys might have done that 25 years ago, but they didn't have the technology available to, or the voice or the platform otherwise to do this. So should we expect something like this to go on in the future? Sure, but I also think this is an isolated incident. I mean, Nick Emery is this whole story with Nick Emery is such a unique case that I don't know that this is something you start to see on some type of a regular basis. But I mean, it's going to happen.
You're saying it's not unique that Emery made a dumb decision, because I think that unfortunately he's made several public ones. That's just, you know, facts, right? I'm not ripping the guy. You're saying that this isn't likely to be a thing that we see a bunch of BYU athletes tweeting at recruits that they shouldn't come to BYU after they transfer or quit.
No, I don't think it becomes a. I don't think you start seeing this in a series. No.
No, I don't think so either. I agree with you. The whole, I mean, you want to see a bunch of over emotional tweets? Go to BYU Twitter after the Washington loss. And those are all people, a lot of people.
Or the
our
Utah
age.
Loss.
Or the Utah loss. Or hey, University of Utah, you know, Twitter on late Friday night after the USC loss.
You know, what's Nick Emery? Like, what is he, 20, whatever he is? Like, he's still a young guy, right? You're right. You log on to BYU Twitter after a loss, you're going to see 50-year-old men saying just ridiculous things.
Well, can we stop calling for Kalani to be fired after every loss? I get it if you don't think he's the guy to lead the program going forward. That's fine. You can have that opinion. There's certainly some facts that his record against our rivals is terrible, right? I mean, there are facts to back it up. The recruiting rankings haven't been where we thought, some of us thought they would be, because Kalani was supposedly, you know, this savant of a recruiter, right? All that kind of stuff. But can we stop calling for his head after every freaking loss? We were supposed to get beat by Washington. All of us thought ahead of time, except for you, that we were going to get beat by Washington. I don't understand why all of a sudden you're going to fire the coach because he lost to a team that is way better than him. A week after beating two Power 5 teams. I don't know. Can we just stop? We don't have to call for somebody to be fired or benched after every bad player loss. You know, just those are like Emery. Sometimes you shouldn't tweet it. Think about it.
Don't press
first.
Send.
Don't press send. Type it out, delete, move on. All right.
Type it out. Maybe even save it as a draft.
Actually, don't type it
in
out.
Your proverbial desk
send.
Drawer. And come back the next day and read it again. You know, the old Abraham Lincoln, you know, approach.
Sure. Do it like Honest Abe. Daniel Smith on Facebook, I believe not related to Keith Smith.
Honest Abe.
Yeah, just like Honest Abe. All right. How excited are you for the upcoming UCF series? In your opinions, will the Notre Dame game ever happen in LES? Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag climb on Matt. Let's start with the UCF series, which was announced, what, today, yesterday? When was that?
Today. It was today.
Central Florida, 23 and 24. That's the year, which is weird, by the way. Kind of weird.
Why is that weird? I don't understand why it's weird.
I don't know. We're in the year 2019, and we're talking about games in 2023, and that's not that far from now. It's kind of weird.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay.
All right, whatever.
So,
are you excited or not?
I'm excited to play the one other team that's not in a P5 conference that won a national championship. Oh, zing! I think it's great. This could be a fun one. Yeah. And I think that, and what'll be interesting though is if there's still a non-conference opponent at that point.
So, here's the thing that struck me. Okay, so who did they announce today? They're having a home and home series with.
Who did UCF announce, or who did we announce?
Who did UCF announce today? They announced two.
They announced us and Boise State. Boise, not a state university.
Right. So here's the thing. That seems a little strange to me, the timing. That us and Boise – now, I'm jumping into conspiracy theory land. Would you like to jump in with me?
Yes. I am in the deep end of the conspiracy pool right now, so let's go.
So let's do it. Why are the three of those teams talking at the same time? Could they be planning something bigger than home and home series?
Maybe a long-term deal?
Maybe something longer term where they're all playing each other every season?
Trying to gauge the interest of television partners in such a matchup?
Or perhaps auditioning for the Power Five. Think of it this way. The Big 12 wants to survive in that next TV deal. Adding those three schools is not a terrible idea. Just saying. It's not the worst. It's not the worst idea. May not be the best. All right. What about the Notre Dame? We've talked about this before. It's never happening. They're never coming.
No, that's still a thing. Like, people are still holding on to that. Like, no, guys, they're not coming. Yeah,
they're never coming back. Notre Dame's not
walking through that door.
But I don't think it's likely to happen anytime soon. All right, Tim Jacobson via email. He had two questions. We'll do his first one here. He's wordy here, so I'm going to edit a little bit. But he says Blaine Fowler had an issue with the tackle on Gunnar Romney. Okay. During the USC, his long pass, right? That's the one they're talking about.
Yep.
Where he hit him in the air, or had he landed yet?
I think he was on his way down, but I don't think he had landed yet.
Okay. And then he asks about Tyson's hit that ended his season. Obviously a low tackle, legal in many cases, but illegal when blocking. Right? Punters and kickers can't get hit there. And actually, in the NFL, you can't tackle a quarterback that way. Right? Anymore. Right. So his question is, should there be something done about tackles like what was done with Tyson? And was it a clean tackle? It's definitely a clean tackle. It was completely within the rules. And our guys have made similar tackles dozens of times so far this season. Right?
Fact. That's correct.
Now, whether it should, for safety reasons, those kind of tackles should be removed, I think blocking below the waist is different than tackling.
And blocking below the waist in some instances is okay. Correct. The clear ones is if you have a guy engaged high, you can't go low. Or if you have a guy engaged low, you can't go high, right? You can't do those things. Crackbacked, type blocks where you're blindsiding a guy in the side at the legs. The stuff like that is pretty clear you can't do.
Do you have any problem with the tackle on Tyson?
I don't. And here's the deal. Like, you can't go high and you can't go low. Like, so where do you want him to hit the guy? And when a guy like Tyson's coming at you, leverage is extremely important. You have to get lower than him or he's just going to run you over. And I don't know how you do this, right? You don't want guys leading with the head. You don't want guys hitting, making head-to-head contact. So that's why people are going low, and you're seeing the same pattern of injury at the professional and college level, where people are making tackles lower more frequently than they used to.
And they're going to blow out people's knees, ankles,
and people are going to get hurt as a result. And what the powers that be have decided is they would rather live with those injuries than the head injuries.
Yeah,
that's basically the trade-off that football has made at this point.
There's some good evidence, though, that a lot of these rules have not necessarily brought down concussions as much as people would want, right? Because a lot of the concussions happen on completely clean plays, right? A guy
falls
back and his head snaps, or a lot of times when blocking. That's one of the ones, if you've read about that, that's crazy, right? Like sometimes concussions happen on a play where you wouldn't even know it happened, right?
Well, what's crazy about the head stuff, and we could do a whole show on this, but so I won't get on this soapbox for very long. But they're really – it's the flashy head injury plays is really all they're worried about, and that's a small percentage of your problem. When you look at linebackers, linemen on both sides of the football – and hits on running backs that are legal where they get hit in the head, like that's where a lot of this damage is taking place. You know, it's the repeated blows, especially that take place in the trenches, that we really need to, that people really should be worried about from a health perspective. But they're harder to legislate, and they're not the big flashy, like, you know, guys just getting their clock cleaned coming across the middle, or quarterbacks, you know, these types of things. So they're not going to attract the same type of legislative attention from the NCAA or the NFL.
Well, I mean, the targeting that happened with Zach Wilson this weekend, right, against Washington, it was by rule targeting, despite what Greasy was saying. I couldn't follow him. Like, he was saying it wasn't targeting, and you could tell, I forget who the play-by-play guy was, like, well, he did hit him with the top of his helmet on his head, right?
By rule, it was, by the way the rule is written, it was called correctly. It was targeting.
It was easy, right?
Right.
Like, I had it on the first replay. I wasn't sure when it was fast, right? Because sometimes heads can go back when they didn't get hit.
Right.
But it was clear on the replay to me. I still hate the rule, even though it favored us. And I hate the fact that guy's going to miss the first half of his next game. I think it's stupid. I still hate that rule, right? I just don't see how that's doing anything, and you can
punch a guy. Something that's often an unintentional foul.
I don't think that
the punishment doesn't really seem to fit the crime, right?
Yeah.
Like, but if you take a swing at somebody, like, you want to suspend a guy for a half of the next game because he tried to punch somebody, or he did punch somebody in the face mask, like, that makes sense to me.
How about he hit somebody? How about he hit somebody out of bounds, 5 yards out of bounds, right? Like, this was an actual football play. He was trying to sack him. He's tall. Wilson's not, right? Like, there is just, like, there's some physical pieces about this, and that's fine with it being a penalty.
And you're moving really fast.
Really fast, right? So, anyway. All right, next question we have is from Andre Hutchins. That's at @AC_Hutchins. You still guys have a beef or something? You still dislike each other?
I don't want to talk about it.
All right, that's fine. Oh. After Saturday's 45-19 result, is Washington really that good? Is BYU really that bad? We'll get back to that later because that's our big why for today. What were the top three reasons BYU lost the way they did? I keep going back to those back-to-back face mask penalties and how bad those hurt. That was early on, right? It was just a really bad game overall. We didn't get beat because of those two penalties. That's not in the top three for me.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
I mean,
those penalties, like, they may have come at a time where it felt like the tide really shifted, but that's not what did it in. I mean, no, I'm not going to pinpoint it to those penalties for sure.
So give me your top reason, just one. What's the top reason we lost to Washington?
They're just a better team.
They have better players at every position on the field, except for maybe three. Eason today is a better quarterback than Zach Wilson. Is that fair? Today.
Yes. Oh, that's fair.
Okay. Their running backs are as good or better than Tyson.
That may be true.
Their wide receivers are all better than our wide receivers. I mean, their top two or three, better than our top two or three.
Yeah, but I think more importantly, their wide receivers are better than our defensive backs.
Very good. Very good. Bushman probably is better than their tight end, who was decent.
That's probably true, but they didn't have as many weapons that they had to cover, right?
Correct. Tonga is better than anybody on their defensive line, but I would say their defensive line, if you're drafting out of the two teams, the second, third, and fourth round out of the defensive line would probably be Washington. See where I'm going here?
Well, I mean, we gave up. Easton threw for almost 300 yards and three touchdowns, guys.
He looked like, good. I mean,
that's good. Just a really good football team.
I mean, even like, when
I don't know
we covered
that there
well,
is a. He I don't know that there it. Is a tweak to the scheme that we can make on either side of the football that win this game for us. Like, yeah, it's,
I don't think so.
I hate to quote the go with the Mendenhall quote, but it's execution.
Yeah.
Like they're just a better team. They just beat us.
Yeah, they just beat us. I mean, some people are going to talk about the defense. Last year against Washington, we gave up yards per play. Don't talk about total yards with me. Yards per play. Right? We gave up 8 yards per play. This year we gave up 7. Right? Like, this isn't any worse than last year. The defense, which was a pretty good defense last year, looked terrible against Washington. We have matchup problems on defense with them all over the field. Still.
Yes.
Right? And that was true. Last year it was worse on offense, right? We did better this year offensively than we did last year, statistically. So, I mean, anyway. Yeah, I mean, we lost because they're better. I think Washington is that good. I think they, despite that loss to Cal, they may end up being a top 15 team. I think Cal.
They're going to challenge to win the Pac-12, guys.
Cal might be good. I didn't think they'd be good, but they might be good. Mike Barlow at Ruckus76 says, what are your thoughts on us losing one of the top three players on both offense and defense to season-ending injuries? Tyson and Zane. Let's save Tyson's because we got another question on that next. Zane hadn't played that much this year. His loss is big, but I don't have the snap counts in front of me. We've been playing without him most of the year. I think this one is impactful because I think he's a really good player, and it stinks that he was never healthy enough to play this year, and I hope he gets another shot if he wants it next year with a medical red shirt because I think he could still get one. But you know, I think it's already been the loss. They've already dealt with it, right?
Yeah. And I think what's interesting here is I think you've already seen some guys step up, right? I think all over the defense, I think IU is in that category. Wilgar's in that category. Even Max Tooley, I mean, where'd Max Tooley come from? Right.
Yeah.
So I think in the linebacker spot, you've had a bunch of people step up over the last couple of weeks. That makes me feel like we're going to be okay. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm going to miss Zane Anderson, and I think the defensive coaching staff is going to miss him.
It'd be better if we had him.
Yeah, of course. But I think that it's a recoverable loss. You know, and even if we get into the defensive backfield and how the adjustments at the linebacker spot is specifically what you know with Zane coming out, I think you can make up for this stuff. Especially given, you know, what we have coming at us the next couple of weeks.
I agree. So let's move on to the Tyson injury. Luke Crockett says on Facebook, 3 connected questions. Does the injury to Tyson's ACL change y'all's perspective on the season? How much does the missing running back affect our passing game? And do Katoa and Asupa have what it takes to keep the running game afloat? Matt, let's just answer that all together. This is a massive loss, correct?
Yeah, this is probably the worst loss we could suffer from a personnel standpoint.
Worse than Zach?
Yeah. I think I feel like the drop off from Tyson to whoever is next is probably greater than the drop off from Zach to Jaren Hall.
Yeah,
Jaren Hall's got a slightly different skill set, is going to do things a little bit differently. You're going to have to make some adjustments to the offense, right? And I'm not saying that he's as good as Zach Wilson, but I think the gap is smaller.
Fair enough. You were right, and I these words pain me. You were right all off season. You said 2 things. You said Tyson Williams would be the man all off season. I didn't believe it, but you believed it. Good for you. And you said, second, if he gets hurt, we're in trouble because we don't have enough depth at that position. You were right on both accounts. I'm now worried about the depth because I think Katoa and Asupa can handle the load. I'm not actually – I don't feel as strongly about this as you do, about the drop. My concern is after them. If one of these guys goes down, I don't know who the next guy is that I'm going to feel comfortable with. Algier, like I read, and all due respect to a friend of the podcast, Jay Drew, he was saying, like, very talented, you know, Algier and former Rice star, Asuka. Asuka wasn't a star at Rice. He was a good player, right? And Algier hasn't played enough for any of us to say, like, you know, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Algier, maybe one of these other guys will step up and be just as competent. But what we saw last year is when a bunch of the guys got hurt, our ability to run the football was severely damaged. And so I'm not worried about Toledo. I'm worried about post-Toledo. I'm worried about Boise State and Utah State. I think we'll be able to. Offense, I don't think, is going to be the problem on Saturday. I think we'll score because Toledo's defense is terrible. Anyway, well, let's evaluate the season so far. We're 4 games in, 2-2. At the beginning of the year, both of us said after 4 games we would be 2-2.
So, well, look at that.
Yay for us. We're geniuses. So you look at that, 2-2. The wins didn't come exactly like we thought. But Jaron Nielsen, this was actually a tweetback question from a week ago that he sent in like a day late. But it's still relevant, so I'm going to do it now. That's on Twitter, at TheVitMan1. He says, we are all high on these overtime wins. Well, not as high as we were, Jared, because then we lost. But it's okay. But after re-watching the film and poring over the numbers, I'm not sure we had any business winning either of those games. Can you cite anything to prove otherwise? Oh, and then he says, Viteratina surgeon equals Vitman. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I read that. I was like, what is – I don't know what you're referencing.
Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag cardiac cougs. Matt, did we have any business – can you cite anything that says we had business winning those overtime games?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and cite the final score both times. How about that?
Eye surgeon. He's an eye surgeon. All right.
Oh, Bitman. That came up. We talked about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So the final score. How about this? Our total yards against USC were about the same. Like, that USC game was very, very even. Quite frankly, I don't think there's any argument that we didn't deserve to win that USC game. We caused 3 turnovers. They did not. And the yards were about the same.
And for me, the turnovers is really the big story there, right? But if every statistically you run down like the basic statistics, third down efficiency, total yards, passing, yards per pass, rushing, like, you know, penalties, time of possession. I mean, this was a very statistically even football game, but the one big difference there is the 3 turnovers to 0, which were, you know, those three picks, which were a result of the pressure we got up the middle, which is a little bit untraditional, but we've talked about that, right?
Well, and good coverage, right? We confused their freshman quarterback with mixing up coverages. Sometimes gave him a man look, but dropped in the zone, and sometimes gave him a zone look, and it turned out to be man, right?
So if you're gonna say we didn't have any business winning that game, then you have to say USC didn't either.
Right. The Tennessee game's different to me. We got outplayed. Almost the entire game. Statistically, we got outdone. Obviously, Tennessee made some massive mistakes in the fourth quarter with their coverages and other things. Did we have no business winning that game? It's one of those where you probably should not have won it, right? But those happen, and we've been on the other side of those before, right? I mean, you look at the Beck to Harleen game. Do we have any business winning that one? I mean, all anyone has to do on Utah's side is you just have one defender to stay with Harleen, and they just pick that pass off, or at minimum pull Harleen down, and you have to do it again, right? I mean, some games come down to one or two plays. Most games don't. But some games do, and that Tennessee game came down to that one play. If they tackle Simon at the 50, the game's over, right? I mean, I guess we could have gotten a Hail Mary, but, you know.
Or if they stand up Tyson.
Yeah.
You could extend it a little bit.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, again, that one, I can understand why someone would feel that way. But I don't think we were outplayed by Tennessee by that much in that game. I mean, they played a terrible game. We might have also played a terrible game until the fourth quarter in overtime. But they played a terrible game the whole game. So on offense, how do you grade the offense so far, Matt? I mean, is this offense, let's do it this way, better than you expected, worse than you expected, or what you expected at this point in the season?
I'd say it's about what I expected. I think Zach Wilson looks better than I was expecting him to look, and the offensive line definitely looks better than I was expecting them to look. I figured, as we've said before, that we were going to have a feature running back and that it would be Tyson, which is what we got up until last week. The receiver core, that nobody there's blowing me away yet. And Bushman, I don't think has had enough good looks. I think he's just attracting a lot of defensive attention.
Can he not false start, please?
Yeah, that would be nice.
He's not the only one doing that either.
He's not the only one with that problem either.
What other wide receivers have had a false start? Both of his false starts were lining up as a wide receiver. You can't ever do that. Linemen, I can get it. Right? Like, I get why linemen have false starts. It annoys me, but it happens at every level of football, right? Wide receivers, if you're past high school, you should not jump off sides.
Especially if you're Matt Bushman and you're worried about some guy bumping you at the line of scrimmage. But you're way bigger than that guy.
Well, yeah, but that guy was pretty good. I mean, he beat him a few times, but he also got blanketed a lot. And that guy was jamming him at the line. So I get why it happens, right? He is trying to make a move before the guy can get his hand on him, right? So that it actually makes an advantage for him. The guy reaches out to hand check him and Bushman's already to the side or past him, right? So I get it, but you can't do it. You can't do it. You can't do it as a wide receiver. Anyway, to your point, Bushman's not getting enough looks.
Yeah, I'd say that's true.
Okay. I would say the offense is better than I expected, but very different than I expected. I thought we're passing the ball about 60% to 40. I thought it'd be the other way around. I thought we were going to go run heavy with Tyson and Asupa and Katoa, and that would be 60% running, which is very uncommon in today's college game. I get that. But I thought we're going to line up. We've got this talented offensive line, we've got a quarterback that can run, and we're going to run the ball more than we have. But I think the offense is a little better. I mean, we did a lot better. Now, Washington defense is probably not as good as they were last year, but I thought the offense just looked better. I thought, I thought that Zach looked a lot better than we had with Tanner last year, right? Two different QBs, to be fair, but anyway. What about Zach Wilson? We talked about him a little bit last week. What kind of grade are you giving him as a quarterback so far this year?
I think I'm giving him a B to B plus. Yeah, and he made there were some mistakes in the Utah game that were costly. You know, we've talked about him kind of ad nauseum. But other than that, I mean, I see real progress with Zach Wilson. I think that and you look at where he was at the end of the season last year, up against the competition he was dealing with, and the way he's performed in these first four games. It's not been perfect, but I'd say he's playing. He's outplaying expectations for me.
Yeah, yeah. I would say he's outplaying expectations for me, or at least at expectations. I had pretty high ones for him. I mean, you also think statistically, some people are pointing out, well, it's not as good as last year. And we talked about that last week a little bit, too, because of the sample size and who he's played, right? Outside of Boise State, I think he's played three of the best four defenses he's going to play this year. I think Boise is the next one that's going to give him though I'm not, because of who they played, I'm not 100% sure Boise's defense is as good as they look statistically right now. We'll see. But, I mean, USC's defense, I think, is okay. I don't think they're terrible. Tennessee's defense, I don't know what they are. And then Utah and Washington both have top 20 defenses. So you look at that and you say, you got to grade on a curve a little bit with his statistics so far.
He's completing 63% of his passes.
Yeah, he's completing a high percentage of passes.
He's made some key plays at key moments, in the statistics.
No, you can't. You can't really capture that. What about Grimes?
B minus.
I'll give him a B minus. I think Grimes is figuring out, and this loss of Tyson may throw him off a little bit, but I think after the Utah game, I think he figured out the identity and how to mix his play calling up to keep defenses more on their toes than he did against Utah. And I think some of the little wrinkles he's put in will look really good against lower competition. For example, when they do that defense only offense against somebody like Liberty, you could just run that all day maybe and win, right? Tonga is your fullback, you know, just plowing through people. What about Gumwalaku playing running back? I've had a couple of people on Twitter say that. I say that's a terrible idea, but
it's an awful idea. You're going to get him hurt.
Yeah, you'll get him hurt, and he's not a running back, right? Get him in space, maybe. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing him on offense once or twice if you thought you got a good play that could work. So let's look at the defense, Matt. So Tim Jacobson sent another email, and he's basically, I'll sum it up as this: USC, the defense worked, right? The defense basically gave up a bunch of running yards in order to stop the air raid passing attack. But he is concerned that we don't have balance on defense. He says we can't stop the pass and the run at the same time. Seems like Tuiaki doesn't think he needs to or thinks he can stack the box to stop the run. So why not play less zone and put more men in the box? Am I missing some scheme understanding, or is our run defense execution just the pits? If you understand Tuiaki's scheming, please explain. I thought I understood what he's doing, but now I am lost. Matt, I don't know what he could do to have beat Washington, because he tried both and both failed. Right? He stacked the box in the second half. It didn't slow them down. Eason just threw it over the top.
And we've talked about this before, right? I mean, I think he skinned to a place where he has to say, look, I'm going to try and beat them I'm going to take away the things I know I can take away and let them have the stuff where I think they're better than me. And the problem with the application of that philosophy in the Washington game is that they were well-rounded enough, and you couldn't take enough of the one phase of the game away to slow down the offense. Like, right? And so if you can't do that, you're going to lose. But the other thing to keep in mind is that, you know, that Washington offense is very good. That quarterback is extremely talented. And when you look at the Utah game, Zach Moss, I mean, just for his sake, I hope he recovers, right? Because I think he's a really talented football player. But that guy is really good. I mean, even if you take, but that being said, I think if you look at, like, just in total yards given up, okay, defensively, and I had this pulled up here, so this might be a little bit off, but this will be close, okay? So total yards given up defensively, we're like 100 and something, okay? We're ranked like 120th or something, okay? And if you take or rushing yards given up, if we're just looking at rushing defense, you take Zach Moss's 200 yards away, he rushed for like 187 yards or something, we're still like barely cracking the top 10. And so that's if Zach Moss had rushed for 0 yards. So I do think we have a little bit of a problem with run defense. And I talked about this at the beginning of the season. We gave up a lot of red zone rushing touchdowns last year. And I see the same type of thing forming here for us this year. We've got to figure out a way, right, to be good enough at that, that maybe that isn't the thing we can take away, but you've got to be good enough at the thing that you're letting them have, that you could at least slow them down.
Yeah,
or you've got to totally eliminate one phase of an offense. Like, right, you've got to completely shut down. If you can completely shut down the run game against somebody, then you're putting even a very good quarterback in a very tough spot. If you can totally shut down the passing game, then you're putting a really good running offense in a really tight spot, right?
Yeah, but that's the whole point. You don't want to do that. What you want to do is take away what they're comfortable with, right? Not necessarily just take something away. Because if you take the passing game away against the University of Utah, we would have gotten – Moss would have run for 250 yards, right?
Correct.
So I'll put it this way. The defense has some issues, and I'm not denying, to your point, this is not the best run defense we've had in Tuiaki's tenure. And I think that's personnel-related, not scheme-related. I don't think we have the linebackers to stuff these holes. Chaz Ahu is playing linebacker. He is listed at 206 pounds. We have defensive backs who are heavier than he is. We do not have the run-stuffing linebackers we're typically used to seeing. Okay, we've got big bodies on the defensive line, but we do not have that. The other piece is we cannot create pressure from the sides without blitzing.
And here's where that comes in and becomes very painful in our rush defense is we can't set the edge. And when you looked at what Tennessee was able to do is they just over and over again ran this zone blocking scheme and just let the running back find the hole and go, right? And if you can't – like if you don't have strength across the front – like then that's going to work all day because you're just the bubble, right? The lines just kind of shift until they find the soft spot. Yeah. And so you can work around, you know, a guy like Tonga. You can work around even a Mahe up the middle if the defense can't set an edge. And that's part of what we've really struggled with here is – and it's an outside linebacker defensive end issue.
So our three sacks this year, Kyrus Tonga, Faotea and Chaz Ahu. Two of those guys are over 300 pounds and the other guy's barely over 200. Right? No Kafusi sacks from any of the Kafusis. Right? We don't have anybody like we've had the last few years that can cause problems in the running and passing game from the edge. So I think Tuiaki's actually doing a really good job. I think he's maximizing what he's got, and he is trying not to expose and give up big plays. I also think that I miss Bronco Mendenhall because I like Tuiaki. I think he's a good defensive coordinator. I think Bronco Mendenhall is the best defensive coordinator BYU ever had. And I think he would, with this personnel, would figure out a better way to do it than Tuiaki, and that it's not a knock on Tuiaki, right? I just think Mendenhall is one of the best in the business. So, but I think the defense is fine. I think we knew the defense, because of personnel losses, was going to be a little bit worse this year, which they are. And we hoped that the offense was going to be a little bit better, which they are, and we're 2-2. So I don't think anybody needs to panic about the defense, right? By the way, they're going to give up some yards on Saturday to Toledo because Toledo has a good offense, right? So everyone's going to like, oh my gosh, we're getting, you know, Toledo's, you know, running up and down the field. Toledo's good. So don't let brand name recognition overshadow reality and facts, right? Better.
People are going to freak out. People are going to freak out when Toledo scores 14 points in the first quarter.
Yeah. And they've got a better offense than Tennessee. I mean, that's not even something controversial. All right, so let's talk about the rest of the season here before we talk about Toledo. Zachary Thornton at Coronado Zach on Twitter says, putting my blue goggles on for momentary pleasure, if we are able to win out the rest of the way, would BYU contractually be stuck going to Hawaii if a higher ranked bowl came along? The answer is technically yes, but you never know because ESPN is involved and they can make something happen, right?
Yeah, they can figure that out.
But if we're a two-loss team, we're not going to a New Year's Six. So
no, sir.
So who cares, right? You get a slightly better bowl matchup. I don't know that I care that much. Spencer Thurman on Facebook says, the question that has plagued us all summer is now answered. We started 2-2. Spencer thought we'd be 1-4. He feels pretty down, though. What does BYU need to do to finish out the year 6-2? Just play their schedule. They're going to finish out the year 6-2. I don't know why everyone's panicking because we got crushed by a team that most of us believe we're going to get crushed by. I know I'm going back to my earlier rant, but I understand why everybody feels bad after the Washington game. There's no reason to panic. We beat USC the week before. The week before. They're not terrible. They're not great, but they're not terrible, right? We're going to lose two more games this year, though. I don't know who to who, and maybe three. I mean, you're 5-3 or 6-2 the rest of the year, I think. So just buckle up. I don't know who it's going to be, but we're going to lose probably to Boise and somebody else.
But I think one of the things,
San Diego, like, I don't know. Pick one.
Yeah, probably. But I think even if I was looking at this earlier today, here, I'm going to pull it up again. If you look at Football Outsiders, okay?
Yeah.
They still have us with a 20. What is this? We've got a 21% chance of only losing two more games, right? So that's what is that? That's probably Boise State and Utah State.
Yeah.
You know, and then running the table other than that. So what is that? That's a 4-loss season. You know, I mean, if you look at these statistics, and I scrolled back by them, but if you look at these statistics, it probably tells you that we drop another game or maybe two after that. But we probably end up in that 4 or 5 loss space. But
you have to be careful.
I don't know.
You have to be careful with all those advanced stats until week 5, 6, or 7, because not enough teams have played each other for the strength of schedule stuff to kick in, right? Because we don't actually know who's good yet. Is Boise good? I think so. But who have they played? A terrible Florida State team? Right? So is Boise good? I don't know yet. I think so. How about Utah State? Is Utah State good? I think so.
Yeah, but I don't know.
But I don't know, right? How good is USC, right? They lost to us, but then beat Utah. You know what I mean? This first 4 weeks, you think you know everything, right? You think we know how good BYU is. As fans who've watched every minute of every game, and in some cases rewatched some of the games, we think we know. But I don't know that we actually do, because, number one, teams aren't static, right? We lost Tyson Williams, and that brings us down, right? Somebody else may step up and start playing better. Somebody else may get healthier, right? Zach Wilson could get hurt, heaven forbid, right? And then you have no idea.
And look at what's happening with a couple of our opponents, right? Like, Utah's lost their stud running back. USC just found out that their third-string quarterback might be the best one they had on the roster. So, like, stuff is no pretty – I'll give you that.
Super fluid, right?
Jeez, that guy had a game, huh? Well, isn't he glad he didn't transfer? Clayton Shelton's like,
This is why you don't
hanging
transfer.
On to his job because that kid didn't transfer.
You know,
he
this
kept
is,
his job because that kid didn't transfer.
This is the memo to everybody. Unless you're somebody in a situation like what's his face at Alabama, who's now at Oklahoma. I can't think of his name.
Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, Hurts. Where you can graduate transfer into a situation where you're almost guaranteed to be the starter. Okay.
For a team that may go to the playoff.
Yeah, likely it's going to go to the playoff, right?
You're going to go from one 4-team playoff team to another
4-team.
Right? Like, that's
yes.
A very rare circumstance.
Transferring is, again, I don't care if guys transfer. They can transfer all they want. I mean, heck, I would, reduce the restrictions on transferring. But if you're going to transfer, you have to keep in mind that it may not be as good on the other side, because there's also going to be other quarterbacks who want that job in the other program, right? And you still have to go out on the field and perform. There's no magic wand here, right? Like, you go out there and you still have to win football games and play well. So It's tough. So John Jensen on Facebook says, BYU beats USC. USC beats Utah. Utah beats BYU. In the all things relative analysis of football, what does this tell us about the 2019 Cougs? Should it give us any improved hope for the rest of the season? Yeah, I think so.
I think we're better now than we were a month ago.
Yeah,
I don't know that we beat Utah, but we're better now than we were a month ago.
Yeah, I think so. Especially on offense. Especially on offense. Even with Tyson's injury, I think we're better than we were a month ago. Now, we'd be much better if we could keep him. All right. So, Matt, game time, we're going to do over-under. And there's something else you want to do today, but we're out of time.
That's fine.
Okay. So
because it was just going to result in a maniacal rant.
Epic Matt rant about how Tom Homo's not as bad as people think he is. All right.
And people on Cougar Board are crazy. Yeah, all right. Rant Cougar over. Moving crazy. On.
All right. We're going to do a little over-under Toledo preview. Okay.
Yes. All the right. Toledo Rockets.
The Toledo Rockets. BYU total.
Can we just at least make, we've got to at least make one reference to their mascot who looks like, what's that band name? Das Punk or whatever
didn't
they are.
Didn't we already do this in preseason?
We probably did, but I just had to make the reference because I wasn't sure it was going to come up. Okay. So there it is. We've made the reference.
All right. Das Punk. There you go. Total yards for BYU's offense, 505. Over or under?
I'm going to go with the under.
So let me get this straight. Toledo has given up 499 yards per game. Okay. BYU is averaging, you know, a little under 400. So you're basically saying we're going to be closer to that average maybe than their terrible defensive average. I just want to
I think we're going to come in just under 500.
Over, because we're going to rush for more than 220 yards as a team.
Oh, okay. Oh, sure.
Asuk was going to have 150. These guys can't tackle, and they can't scheme for the run. Just wait. I mean, we're going to run all over these guys with our offensive line size. They haven't seen anything like us yet.
They've seen a running back like us at Kentucky.
Yeah, they've seen a running back. Kentucky's offensive line isn't as good.
And they gave up 38 points, right? And they gave up 38 points in a loss there. But that
Kentucky
running back
is pretty good, by the way. Kentucky's pretty good.
That's this isn't your daddy's Kentucky football team, okay? That's a decent team.
Yeah, and I'm not knocking Toledo as a program. I think they're pretty good. I'm just saying their defense has played very poor so far this year. BYU, 6.3 yards per play.
I don't have that stat in front of me. I'm going to go ahead and say over.
It's over. Toledo, 6.5 yards per carry. They're averaging over 7 yards per carry rushing the football.
I'm going to take the over.
I'm going to take the over. I think they're going to run a lot and well. All right. So BYU is favored by 2.5. Are you taking the points there?
I am taking
BYU.
I'm taking BYU.
At 2.5. I am also taking
BYU.
Yeah, I think they will cover at 2.5. Are you taking the over-under on 60 total points scored between the two teams?
I am going to take the under.
I'm going to take the over. Matt, final score, your prediction.
28-21 BYU.
I'm going to say 33-30 BYU in overtime.
Oh, no, we can't go to overtime against these clowns.
They're not clowns, dude. They're a better football team than Tennessee. Today, they are a better football team. Last year, a better football team. You're just saying clowns because they're from Toledo.
Yes, and that's exactly
Toledo
what I'm
is
saying.
The city of clowns. I don't know. I just made that.
Well, no, I mean, they are apparently the city of rockets. Why is Toledo the Rockets? We talked about this.
Do they make, like, defense things or something?
I don't know. Not that I'm aware of, but I don't know. They play in the glass bowl. Those in glass houses shouldn't throw stones.
They shouldn't. Just footballs.
Bad idea.
No stones.
It's a bad idea.
And actually, they run the football more than they throw it. So, interesting. I think this is going to be a shootout. And I think this is one BYU could lose, but I think they'll win. I hope I'm wrong and that BYU just stomps them. Right, that we just stack the box and they can't throw over us. Though, by the way, they've had a bunch of big, big long pass plays this year. They've got a couple wide receivers averaging what, like 20-something yards per catch.
Yeah, it's craziness.
So I mean, they got a good offense. So we'll see. I think this will be an interesting one. But I think we're both saying win, because we really need a win going to the bye before those big rivalry games. Right?
Yeah, and I think getting a win on the road, it will be a big deal.
Yep. Agreed.
You know, and this will be a team that as you said, I mean, this will be a challenging matchup for us. And so being able to come out against a challenging opponent, get a win on the road after this drubbing from Washington could be a really big deal.
Yeah, agreed. All right, Matt. Well, this is it. Thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/riseandshout. Go to iTunes and subscribe if you haven't done so already. Thanks, everybody, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.
Anything about Instagram here at the end, or you're good this time?
No, I think I'm just going to not embarrass myself. We're laughing with love.